SBS Radio.
Wadamuli and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and coming up for you now, my yarn with Carly Bracknell, director of the first Aboriginal language dubbed film in Australia in Noongar language. Fist of Fury, Noongar Da, is a reimagining of a classic martial arts film.
Kaya, hello, my name is Carly Bracknell, Kajilba Cardin, and I'm a Noongar person from the southwest of Western Australia.
Now, you are a multidisciplinary artist. Thanks for joining us on NITV Radio today, Carly. It's an absolute pleasure to have you join us.
And that's a pleasure to be here with you, yeah.
That's deadly. Thanks, sis. Now, of course, you have directed the first film which has been dubbed into Noongar language, a Bruce Lee film, Fist of Fury. How did this whole concept first come about?
It was inspired by the Navajo mob and them translating and dubbing a Star Wars film. And I didn't know about that until my colleague at Perth Festival, Tom Vincent, brought that to my attention. And he said, you know, you've done great work with the Shakespeare Project. Do you think that this Navajo Star Wars dub could be a prototype for doing something in Noongar here? And I said, absolutely, but just not Star Wars. Let's do something a little more art house that speaks to physical body language, and something that doesn't originate from the English language. Star Wars is in English, so I wanted to dub a film that ideally wasn't in English. And I kind of landed on Bruce Lee.
You've got to love Bruce Lee. I know growing up, my big brother actually on many occasions thought that he was Bruce Lee himself. What is it about blackfellas and our appeal to Bruce Lee, sis? Do you know?
Well, I reckon a couple of things. Bruce Lee came to our, I guess, mothers and fathers, that generation, old people, in a time where, you know, our mob were newly considered citizens in their own country, according to this new law here. But it was also probably the first non-Anglo big film star or film star that they'd seen at the drive-ins. And also Bruce Lee's physicality, like his athletic appearance, is, I think, akin to, you know, the traditional look of a lot of our ancestors and how they are slim, trim, physically fit for the terrain that we survived and thrived in, hunter-gatherer mode. But also, I think the other thing to sew those two together is the fact that you got this one man who's willing to stand up to biggest mobs to get justice and to stand up for what's right. And those similarities, I guess, particularly in the storyline and the plot with the Cantonese community in Hong Kong in Fist of Fury, resonate very strongly with all Aboriginal groups of this country and the impact that our mob have had to endure since colonisation. I think that the style of Kung Fu is, there's probably elements in that actually that resonate with ceremonial dancing and the athleticism and craft of that kind of form, because Kung Fu is a form. Kung Fu is actually like fast Tai Chi. Tai Chi is considered slow Kung Fu, but it takes incredible core work and poise, I suppose, to physically conduct that in a way where it's expressing those movements or angles or stances. And so some of the traditional dancing, ceremonial dancing that you do requires something of that similar nature. So, yeah, if you dig deeper, I think there's quite a lot of similarities which are the foundation or the base from which we are admirable of Kung Fu as an art form, and in particular Bruce Lee being one of the, you know, biggest stars of that martial arts style.
I think you captured that really well. Thanks for answering my question, sis. Now, Bruce Lee is a cinema legend. He has so many films out. Was it hard to pick just one film, and how did you actually just choose Fist of Fury?
No, it wasn't hard to choose. I mean, both Tom and I believe that Fist of Fury is probably the better film of Bruce's catalogue. Because he's portraying a character as well, I think later with his fame and the films that he wrote and adapted for screen, it became a little more about... Basically, I think that Fist of Fury, there's more resonance there in that plotline than a storyline for us, so that's what made it easier. It, by rule of elimination, just the other ones didn't have as much resonance. Fist of Fury definitely had the most resonance for us, and that made it easier for us to choose that one.
I'm really interested in the whole process for how you actually dub a Chinese film into a Noongar language. Can you please share with us some of the experiences you had on where you first started with this process and how it all came together, please, sis?
Of course, sis. I can share that the process of, well, first and foremost, knowing that we wanted to translate from the original Cantonese dialogue and or script. So that means consulting with the Cantonese community through a representative that I had always hoped would come on board, and that's Ching Ching Ho. She's an incredible artist in her own right and an arts practitioner. She's based out of Melbourne. Her and I worked together, and she also worked with my husband, Dr. Clint Bracknell, on a show called The Caucasian Chalk Circle, which interestingly is a story from China that a German guy wrote, translated into German. Mm. And then it got translated into English and came full circle back here so that we could work with the Chinese director and Dr. Wang. So working with Felix across that 2 or 3 months period really set up a better opportunity for us to work on this, which seemed quite seamless. Having said that, Ching Ching Ho was not hesitant, but she felt the weight of responsibility to represent the Cantonese language and I suppose Cantonese-speaking community and all of the Chinese mob from Hong Kong when saying yes to collaborating with us on this. Once she was comfortable working with us on this, the process then meant that during lockdown, out of lockdown, we would Zoom. She's based in Melbourne. We're in Perth. We have a really comprehensive Excel document that lists the original Cantonese Chinese characters, and the next column would list, I guess, the English version. Then the next column would list the Cantonese Chinese character semantics. Then the next column would list the translation into English from those characters, Chinese characters, and the semantics of that. Then the next column would contain the Noongar that's been translated from the Cantonese English. And then the next column consists of a translation of Noongar back into English, which we call Noonglish. We don't take any steps, and we didn't take any steps of this language resurgence effort in this dub project lightly. We wanted to make sure that in light of the fact that this will one day be a resource that, in fact, Noongar community can access and hopefully share in an education space, so that we can have young Noongar kids and adolescents and adults access this. With that being on our mind, we needed to be quite thorough, but also because it's a critically endangered language. So we need to take the right steps to be accurate with it, for obvious reasons, but also to be quite sensitive of it. So once we had the Noongar translation, we also worked with Dr. Roma Yibiyang Winma to look over all of our interpretive translations, to edit some of the spelling to align to the language other than English program. LOAT is the acronym. Once all that spelling was right, we then provided that to the ADR specialist who would assist us and work on the project for all of the recordings. And her name is Zoe Baird, and she then input all of the dialogue lines into the appropriate time codes for the film.
Wow.
once we got into the studio, and I am giving you a summary here, mm-hmm. Once we got into the studio, there were some moments where I would need to make executive calls to either switch out a couple of words or replace a word with a less syllable count. Lower syllable count to match the on-screen performers. Mm. And so for anyone that watches the dub, they'll see that we did a really perfectionist type dub of this to honour the on-screen performances in a way that the conveyance of the emotion and the turmoil and the despair that took place in this story or in the way that Cantonese community wanted to convey what they were going through at that time when this film was set in Shanghai. We wanted to make sure that we were doing it a complete justice and a service for them, but also to show that our language is very rich and poetic and nuanced and beautiful. So to honour those parallel. And then, of course, to have the complete confidence and trust of the vocal cast and the voice cast to get into this booth and deliver all of that. So they're delivering their mother tongue without really knowing some of the vocab. So we did have a rehearsal with the lead cast before we went into the studio, and then I would coach everyone else through that process in the booth as we went. And that's a summary of Woe to Go.
And that's an amazing summary you've just given me, Kylie Bracknell. How deadly is that indeed? How long did this process take? I'm thinking years, yeah?
Oh, sister girl, one would think that, but honestly, we nearly sort of wrecked ourselves. Once we got the green light in end of August, beginning of September, we had to have the project finalised by the end of December.
Wow.
So literally 3 months.
That is
within
incredible.
3 months, we had to have it done. And then we were so fortunate to have Rick Curtin work on the dub as well and just clean up a lot of the original sound, music, the score for the project, and level out some of the inadequacies and patches with the original audio tracks. So he was instrumental in bringing that, I guess, into today in terms of the sound quality. And we were in his studio sort of looking at a bit of that as well to do the final master. Yeah, it was about three and a half months max to for the turnaround for everything. And huge thanks and kudos to everyone that worked on it with us. And I just am thrilled that Perth Festival saw the importance of a project like this and greenlit it. For their artistic director and Ian Granage, and also the board and all of the staff there. And it was great for us as Clint and I, as Doomring and Spear, to be co-executive producers on the project to ensure that we have a say in how this project is held and how it's celebrated and, you know, the sort of steps that we get to take to share this in the future. It's really important. So the collaboration process around all of this has been right, which is so, so important. And, yeah, hopefully a really good benchmark for other people who are wanting to collaborate on a project of a similar nature.
And talking about collaborating on a project of a similar nature, is this something that you'd like to do into the future, perhaps with other language groups from around the world, sis?
I guess not me personally. It's not something I think about doing with others collaboratively, but it would depend on the context, and it would also depend on what the main objective of it is. I mean, I would love to be available to empower other communities to do something similar autonomously themselves, but I'm definitely not ruling out a possible collaboration some way, somehow. That would be really cool. It's possible, I guess, but yeah, it would just need to sit in the right pocket in terms of why and how.
Of course, yes.
That would be exciting, of course. You'd investigate that for sure.
Of course, you teamed up with Perth Festival's Noongar Advisory Circle to create the redub. What was this process and experience like for you, sis?
Oh, solid. There's nothing more scary, but also rewarding and empowering than having your own senior members of community back you and believe in what you're trying to achieve. And they were a big part of greenlighting this project with Perth Festival, because Perth Festival's board hold them in high esteem and really value their input into the program. And it was wonderful to have three, half of the Noongar Advisory Circle actually on the billing as a vocal cast. So we had Dr. Roma Yibiyang-Winma and Barry Maguire and Dr. Richard Wally, OAM. So, instrumental, necessary, and a wonderful support to have their backing.
And my last question to you, is there anything else you'd like to mention in our conversation today? Perhaps something that I might have missed about Fist of Fury Noongar Da?
The things that are really celebratory about this project are, firstly, the trailblazers that have helped keep Noongar language accessible for us as a younger next generation. In all of my work, I never forget where I've come from and the old people that have supported me directly, but also the old people that have kept language alive to support me indirectly and to keep it here for our community. The other things to celebrate are the similarities that we have with other non-Anglo groups. And also, many people won't know that Cantonese is actually becoming quite endangered now as well. I mean, there are far more speakers of Cantonese than there are Noongar, for example, but still there's a shared experience. There's something relatable between our groups. And I wonder about how many of their people have suffered at the hands of colonisation, not only by the British, but Japanese. You know, that's the history. That's not me making anything up. It's just looking at what has happened and sort of, I guess, the grieving period that they go through for life, because those things are always felt. They're never lost, but it's kind of healing that we go through. And being an artist, that healing comes through projects like this sometimes. So the work hopefully will speak for itself. I really wish and hope that on behalf of not just myself, the Noongar Perth Festival, but the Noongar community involved, particularly the Noongar Advisory Circle and all of the voice cast and their families, we hope that when other community groups watch our version of this film, by hearing our sounds and watching Boomerang and Spears subtitles for this version, we hope that they feel the resonance of pride, truth, passion, integrity, and the willingness to be heard in our native tongue, but also to urge people to feel that vibration, or at least learn about what that vibration represents, to be able to hold any kind of language resurgence or reclamation or restoration effort in a careful esteem, to the point where people feel that you're genuine about it. And I also hope that other collaborations take place through this process, because often people forget that it's not just about the projects that have been created, it's about the journey that happened to create those projects, and those are the stories within the actual end result story often matter more than the actual finalized project.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.